Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Writer by Cameron Hart. Narrated by Amy Hall and Wyeth Watts. Chapter 1. Sutton.
There you are,
Hawk says as he comes up behind Tessa. He wraps his arms around her hips, and my best friend spins in his embrace, her dreamy smile matching his. I look down at the bar top while they kiss, trying not to feel like a third wheel. Grabbing a napkin from the dispenser next to me, I twist it in my hands in a familiar, anxious gesture. I've been to the Savage Saints MC clubhouse a dozen times to visit Tessa at work, but my nerves still get the best of me if I'm here longer than 10 minutes. It's not just the clubhouse, though. I get panic attacks if I'm in the grocery store and someone is blocking an aisle I need to go down, or if I'm waiting in line and someone steps up a little too close behind me. Basically, I'm a pathetic mess. The air around me grows heavy, and a spark of awareness shoots down my spine. Ryder is here. I get the same feeling every time the tall, muscled, mysterious man is around me. Turning slightly, I see Ryder's large silhouette sitting on the bar stool on the other side of Hawk and Tessa. My eyes trace the sharp lines of his nose and chin, then wander down to his bulging biceps and thick, corded forearms covered in ink. I imagine what it would be like to curl up in his lap and have those arms wrapped around me, protecting me from everything. Maybe my anxiety wouldn't be so crippling if I knew I had someone like Ryder by my side. I tear my gaze away from Ryder, but not before capturing his chocolate brown eyes. He's so intense, yet I don't feel like he's scrutinizing or objectifying me. No. When Ryder's attention is on me, I feel safe, seen, protected. All things I had been sorely lacking in my life until recently. A yawn sneaks up on me. I close my eyes, breaking eye contact with Ryder as I lift my hand to cover my mouth. I haven't stopped yawning since I stepped into the clubhouse an hour ago to visit Tessa while she finished her bartending shift. "Why are you so tired, Sutton?" Tessa asks. "Oh, you know," I say vaguely as I shrug. "Working on a big design project." It's not a lie, but it's not the whole truth. I am working on a big design project I hope to finish soon. The client paid half up front, and I get the other half once everything is complete. As for the rest, you need to rest and take care of yourself, my friend gently reminds me. Tessa rests her hand on my shoulder, squeezing slightly. You have people who care about you now. It's not about survival anymore. We get to decide how we live our lives. I nod, smiling at Tessa. I know she means well, but I'm not done operating in survival mode. It's not her fault she doesn't know. I haven't had the heart to tell her about my dreadful trip back to my hometown a few weeks ago that changed everything. How could I? She's finally safe and happy and living her best life with Hawk. The last thing I want to do is burden her with my family drama and living situation. Thanks for the reminder, I say, before another yawn creeps up on me. Tessa furrows her brow, and I catch Ryder doing the same behind her. His eyes haven't left me once since he sat down, but I don't mind. My friend opens her mouth to say something, but she's cut off by someone slamming their beer mug down on the bar top. Every muscle in my body tenses and I gasp, trying unsuccessfully to hide my whimper. A second later, I regain control, telling myself I'm not in danger. It was just a loud noise. With each steady breath, I remind myself I'm not back in my childhood home, listening to my parents fight or scream at me for being in the way. When I open my eyes again, Tessa has a worried look. I notice that Ryder is gone, his drink untouched on the counter. I'm okay, I tell Tess with a reassuring smile. Still working on my jump scare reflexes, I say with a weak chuckle. My bestie is unimpressed by my attempt at a joke, but she doesn't say anything else.
Let's get you home, beautiful,
Hawk tells Tessa before kissing her on the temple. She leans into his touch, that same dreamy smile spreading across her face. Loneliness threatens to consume me, but I swallow past the lump in my throat. I'm happy for my friend. Ecstatic. No one deserves a happily ever after more than Tessa after everything she's been through. Her horrible, abusive father finally got what was coming to him, thanks to the Savage Saints MC. Hawk takes Tessa's hand and leads her toward the door. I hop off my stool and follow them out into the parking lot. Thanks for visiting me at work tonight, Tessa says as they approach Hawk's motorcycle. Of course, I tell her, giving my friend a hug. I don't get to see you as often these days, so I'll jump on any chance to hang out. I meant for my comment to be sweet, but Tessa frowns slightly. I know I kind of dropped off the face of the earth for a bit. I hold my hands up to stop her. I didn't mean to guilt trip you. Tessa takes my hand in hers, squeezing slightly. You're not guilt tripping me. I've been meaning to stop by the house and see you, but I just... She trails off, looking over her shoulder at Hawk. I grin at Tessa, whose cheeks are slightly pink. No worries. Seriously, I'd rather see you here or at Hawk's, I tell her. Tessa lifts an eyebrow at me, and I realize I may have been less subtle than I had hoped. Thankfully, Hawk hands Tessa her helmet, distracting her enough not to ask follow-up questions. Good thing, too. I'm unsure what I'd tell her if she asked why I don't want her coming to the house. We'll talk later, Tessa calls out as Hawk starts up his bike. I nod and wave, watching them ride off into the night. With a fortifying breath, I straighten my shoulders and walk to my car, hopping inside and starting the engine. When I reach the end of the parking lot, I don't turn left toward the house Tessa and I lived in together. Instead, I turn right, taking the gravel road further away from town. After a few blocks, I pull off to the side and ease my car under a large tree close to the edge of the road. Turning off the car, I heave out a breath and sink further into the seat, resting my forehead on the steering wheel. This is not how I thought my life would turn out. 22 and homeless. Feeling sorry for myself isn't going to fix anything, however. I dig around in my glove compartment for a granola bar I stashed there yesterday, but I can't find it. My stomach growls, and I try to ignore it. I'll pick something up in the morning, I tell myself, even though I'll have the same amount of money tomorrow as I do now. None. Throwing open the driver's side door, I quickly get out and settle into the back seat, where I'll have more room to stretch out. Not much, but more than the front seat. I grab the blanket I keep folded up against the back window and spread it out on top of me, using my purse as a pillow. As I curl up into a ball in the back seat of my car, I try not to let the tears break through. If I cry now, I might never stop. Besides, what good will tears do? Even as I tell myself that, my eyes start to sting. I sniffle as the first tear falls, squeezing my eyes shut until the world around me is nothing but darkness. A pit opens in my chest, an endless void of loneliness that I fear may never leave me. I struggle to get a full breath in as rivers of despair pour from my eyes. Eventually, I cry myself out. My eyes are swollen and my throat is raw. But I have nothing left. At least now I'll finally be exhausted enough to sleep. Pulling the thin blanket around my chin, I try to get more comfortable, only to be stabbed in the hip by a seatbelt holder. I'm sure I'll have a bruise in the morning, but right now, I'm too numb to feel anything. Tomorrow will be better, I tell myself, even though the last 14 days have seemed to get sequentially worse until I ended up sleeping in my car. Still, I have to hang on to that hope. One day, it will get better. Right?
Chapter 2. Ryder. What the fuck am I looking at? I circle the decades-old Toyota Corolla for the third time since finding it partially hidden on the side of the road. I couldn't sleep, so I decided to head to the Savage Saints clubhouse to see if there was anything to clean or fix up. That's when I stumbled upon Sutton's car. Peering in through the back window, I still can't believe what's right in front of my eyes. At first, I thought the car had broken down, and Sutton abandoned it. Upon further inspection, I discovered the woman herself curled up in the back seat. Looking down on her now, I can see her curvy little body, covered in a tattered and worn blanket. Sutton is shivering slightly, her inky black hair tangled around the strap of her purse, which she's been using as a pillow. Her eyes flutter slightly, and I notice her nose and cheeks are red. Has she been crying? My gut twists into a knot just thinking about this precious woman sleeping in her goddamn car. Why didn't she tell anyone? Why didn't I figure it out sooner? I saw how tired she was at the clubhouse last night, but never in a million years did I think it was because she didn't have anywhere to sleep. Fuck. I should have caught her before she left. I had to deal with Slinger slamming his glass down on the bar. He scared my woman, and I won't stand for that. My woman. Ugh, I have to stop thinking about Sutton that way. She's not mine, even though I want her with every cell in my body. God, I can still remember the first time I saw her. I stumbled over my words, grunting at her like a caveman before shoving my giant meaty paw in her face. Sutton blinked at me, and those teal eyes reached into my very being and rearranged my chest to make room for her right next to my heart. When she didn't respond in any way, I realized what a fool I was. Of course she's not interested in someone like me. I'm a solid decade or so older than her. I've served hard time, and my presence alone is intimidating, especially to my sweet Sutton. I don't know what she's been through in her short life, but the mysterious teal-eyed goddess can't even look at her own shadow without cowering away from the darkness. With all of that stacked against me, I'm under no delusions that Sutton could ever be mine. That doesn't mean I won't do everything in my power to ensure she's safe. My eyes drift to the door handles on her beat-up car, and I clench my fists, thinking about how easy it would be for someone to pry them open, even if they were locked. Hell, it wouldn't take much to smash the goddamn window. A growl escapes before I can suppress it. I ball my fists at my sides, every muscle tensing as I try to block out thoughts of what could have happened to Sutton if anyone else found her. Jesus, she's so vulnerable out here. Anything could have happened. Another growl is pulled from the pit of my stomach, and Sutton jerks awake, her eyes wide with fear. I can't fucking breathe when she looks at me like that. I never want her to be afraid of me, even if I tower over her and grunt like a Neanderthal. I hold my hands up, palms out, in a sign of surrender. As soon as she recognizes me, her shoulders relax slightly. She even graces me with a small smile, though it quickly disappears when she realizes I've caught her sleeping in her car. Sutton untangles herself from the scrap of a blanket and pats her hair down before scooting over in the seat and opening the door. She slowly climbs out of the back seat, her eyes immediately focusing on the ground while she twists her hands in front of her. She starts, trailing off as she nibbles her bottom lip. What were you doing sleeping in your car? I grunt more harshly than I meant. Sutton's shoulders rise to her ears, and I want to kick myself for being gruff. You could have gotten hurt. I try again, though my tone is still sharp.
Well, the house, and then my parents,
Sutton can hardly say more than a few words at a time before she gets flustered and starts over. When the first tear falls, my knees give out. Kneeling in front of her, I reach for her delicate little hands, taking both of them in one of mine. Her skin is so soft, so creamy and pure. It only serves to highlight the differences between us. My hands are weathered and worn from long days working and riding in the sun. My knuckles have scars from the violence I've inflicted on others over the years. My fingertips are rough, too rough to handle the broken angel standing in front of me. Breathe for me, little flower, I tell her. Sutton gasps softly. Her ethereal eyes finally meet in mine. I'm not sure where the endearment came from, but it fits. My Sutton is exactly like a little wildflower, beautiful, unexpected, and life-giving. She closes her eyes and takes a shaky breath before slowly exhaling. That's good, I encourage. Take another one for me. Sutton nods, her hands squeezing mine, as she takes a steadier breath this time. God, I can feel her trembling. It takes everything in me to stay kneeling on the ground instead of scooping up this precious woman in my arms and hauling her back to my place so I can tuck her into my bed and ensure she never has to experience another night of homelessness again.
I'm sorry, she finally whispers.
I furrow my brow, tilting my head to look in those blue-green eyes. There's nothing to apologize for. I was worried about you. It's not safe here. Sutton nods, but doesn't say anything else. I want to ask her a million questions, including, but not limited to, her thoughts on a summer wedding and how many kids she wants. However, that will have to wait. I have to be careful with Sutton. She doesn't trust easily, and asking her to tell me how she found herself in this position might be overstepping. My priority is to get her back to my place, back to a safe environment. Once she's rested, we can talk about the next steps, whatever they may be. How about you crash at my place for a bit? I ask, slowly standing from my position on the ground. Sutton keeps her left hand securely locked in mine, making my heart flip inside my chest. On some level, this woman feels comfortable around me. I'll take whatever I can get.
Oh, no, I couldn't inconvenience you like that, she says automatically, standing beside me.
I don't like how rehearsed her response is. You're not an inconvenience, I assure her. I get the sense she doesn't believe me, but she will. Soon, Sutton will know she's not a burden. She's the reason I wake up every day, hoping to steal a glance into her eyes or sit near her while she visits Tessa. She has no idea how obsessed I am with her. And part of me is worried it'll be too much. I don't want to suffocate my little flower. All I want to do is give her room to flourish in a safe environment. Without knowing anything about her past, I know Sutton hasn't had many safe places in her life. That ends today. How about just a nap, then? I offer. I have a guest bedroom, and not to brag, but my couch is amazing. Sutton's lips turn up into a slight smile. Fucking adorable.
Is that right?
She asks softly as I guide her to the passenger side of her car. She stifles a yawn, and I open the door for her, grunting when I realize it was unlocked this whole time. Yes, I reply, hoping to cover the hitch in my voice. When I moved back into my house, the first thing I bought was a huge-ass couch that could fit my 6.5-foot frame. Shit, I almost said when I got out of prison. I don't want to lie to Sutton, but I don't think now is the appropriate time to broach that subject. I just got her to trust me. I can't ruin that by talking about my time behind bars.
That sounds lovely,
Sutton says, before another yawn overtakes her. It's on the tip of my tongue to tell her she's lovely, but I reel it in. I don't know where this cheesy, flowery romance shit came from, but when I'm around Sutton, I can't help it. I want to give her endless compliments to make up for the obvious lack of love she's had in her life. She relaxes into the seat, and I put her seatbelt on for her, not even stopping to consider how overprotective that might come across. I look at her over my shoulder as I click the belt in place, her teal eyes wide and filled with disbelief, longing. Whatever it is, she seems surprised that anyone would go the extra mile for her. Jogging around to the other side of the car, I hop in the driver's seat, adjusting everything so I can wedge my massive body inside. I fucking hate being in a cage, a.k.a. a car. Undoubtedly, a result of being cooped up in a tiny cell for the last 5 years. For Sutton, however, I'll drive this goddamn clown car across the country if it makes her happy. Sutton digs around in her purse for the keys, handing them to me without a word. She can barely keep her eyes open. My heart clenches in my chest. I ease the old car back onto the road and take the quickest route to my place. It's nothing fancy, but it's a place to cook a few meals, wash up, and lay my head at night. That's all I need. Will Sutton want a bigger house? I can make that happen. We'll probably need more rooms anyway once she gets pregnant. Reel it in, I chastise myself. Just because she agreed to take a nap at my place doesn't mean she's suddenly in love with me. But God, wouldn't that be incredible? A few minutes later, I pull into my driveway and shut off the car. Sutton's head rests against the window, and I hear her soft little snores for the first time. This woman is killing me. I unbuckle her seatbelt, careful not to jostle her too much, then get out of the car and jog over to her side. Slowly, I open the door and slide one arm behind her back while the other hooks under her knees. Standing with my precious cargo, I close the door with my foot and head inside, carrying my princess into her new home.
Chapter 3. Sutton. I roll over in the softest bed I've ever been in, burying my face into the nearest pillow, which smells like cedar and cinnamon. Hold up. I know that smell. It's warm and familiar and makes my stomach swoop. Ryder? Memories of this morning come flooding into my mind, and I flop over on my back, covering my face with the pillow. My cheeks heat in embarrassment as I remember waking up to Ryder's growl. God, I can't believe the one person I never wanted to look weak and pathetic in front of found me. At first, I thought he was angry with me. That's the default reaction to my presence. Not anymore, I try to remind myself. Not since leaving my parents. My mom and dad weren't planning on having kids. So to say they weren't prepared or excited would be an understatement. I learned from an early age to stay out of the way. If they couldn't see me, they couldn't be mad at me. At least, that was my logic. It worked about 2/3 of the time. The other third? I shake off those thoughts, not wanting to relive the past. I escaped from my childhood home as soon as I had an opportunity. Unfortunately, that opportunity just got blown to smithereens, thanks to my parental units. Groaning into the pillow over my face, I push all that aside and focus on the present. I have enough to worry about with trying to figure out what to tell Ryder. I can't stay here. That's way too much to ask of him. More importantly, I need to convince him not to tell Tessa about my current living situation. Finally gathering the strength to crawl out of the comfiest bed in the world, I toss the pillow aside and pull the blankets off, swinging my legs over the side of the bed. It occurs to me that I don't remember this room or walking from the car to the house. Oh, God. Did Ryder carry me? My hands immediately cover my rounded stomach, then slide to my extra-wide hips. Shame courses through me at the thought of anyone having to carry me, let alone the sexiest, most chiseled man I've ever encountered. How embarrassing. He must be disgusted. New plan, sneak out of Ryder's house and drive my car off the nearest bridge. Tiptoeing to the closed door, I slowly turn the knob, careful not to make a single sound. Years of living in the shadows and not drawing attention to myself have served me well. With the knob turned all the way, I inch the door open, peering my head out far enough to take in my surroundings. Looking to the left, I don't see anything. Just an empty hallway leading to more rooms. Looking to the right, I see...
Sutton,
Ryder says, sounding equal parts relieved and surprised. He rushes over to me, stopping a few feet away. He reaches out for me, then changes his mind, running his hands through his hair. Oh, hey, I stutter out like an idiot. How long have I been asleep?
3 hours and 14 minutes,
he answers matter-of-factly. And you've been out here the whole time?
No,
he says with a shake of his head.
After tucking you in, I paced around the hall and kept checking on you every 10 minutes. But I didn't want to risk waking you up, so I started pacing in the living room to give you some space.
His eyes never leave mine as he recounts his whereabouts all morning. It's kind of cute that he wants to get every detail right.
After an hour, I cleaned the kitchen and did a lap around the outside of the house to check on some projects I'm working on. Then I prepared lunch and resumed pacing in the hallway because I needed to be here the moment you woke up. I stare at the dark-haired, dark-eyed beast of a man in front of me, watching as the tips of his ears turn red. Is he blushing? After admitting he was so concerned about me, he kept checking in while I was asleep. A mix of overwhelming emotions slam into me, and I throw my arms around Ryder before I can think better of it. He freezes, his muscles tensing the longer I hold on to his torso. I'm about to step away and run out the front door to resume my plan of driving my car off a bridge when Ryder engulfs me in his embrace. His strong arms cover me completely, and I'm wrapped up in the warmest, safest hug in the universe. I snuggle deeper into Ryder, soaking up every single thing about this moment. Breathing his warm, earthy scent, I squeeze him harder, still not quite believing this is happening. Suddenly, my feet aren't on the ground anymore. I'm lifted in the air, and Ryder adjusts his grip to steady me. I gasp, then giggle as he spins me around. It's silly and sweet and so unexpected. And God, I find myself wanting to stay in his arms forever. The moment is over when Ryder sets me back down, taking a step away from me. I crane my neck to look up at the man curiously, taking in his deep brown eyes with a few crinkles in the corners. I love that he's older and has experienced more of life than I have. It's such a ridiculous thought, but if Ryder were mine, his maturity would make me feel protected, safe to explore my life, knowing I had Ryder in my corner.
"Your love,"
Ryder murmurs, his eyes searching mine as if I'm a rare treasure.
"I've never heard it before."
He pauses, his gaze wandering down my face in what can't possibly be awe.
"It's magical."
I'm unsure who is more shocked at his words, me or Ryder.
What I meant was...
"Thank you," I whisper, not wanting him to be flustered. "No one's ever... Well, thanks." I give him an awkward smile, then stare down at my feet. Ryder clears his throat and claps his hands, apparently signaling a scene change. I grin at his tactic, then full-on smile when he takes my hand.
"Lunchtime,"
he announces, tugging me down the hall and into the kitchen. "Oh my gosh, what is all of this?" I gasp, walking forward as I take in all the food set out on the table. There are bowls of fresh-cut fruit, a container of something creamy and delicious-looking, some egg salad, all manner of bread, including a loaf that looks homemade, a giant tray of deli meats, an equally large tray of cheese, and 5 bags of varying chip brands.
"Just a few things for sandwiches,"
Ryder says. I peer over my shoulder at him, one eyebrow lifted.
"Okay, well, it started out as a few sandwich things, but then I realized you might be hungrier, so I whipped up some egg salad and a batch of my almond chicken salad with grapes. Then I thought grapes wouldn't be nearly enough fruit, and, well, I may have gotten a bit carried away when I started chopping up the pineapple."
He trails off, breaking eye contact with me as he rubs the back of his neck in a nervous gesture. I still can't wrap my head around what is happening here. "Wait, so all of this is for me?" I thought maybe he had a bunch of leftovers he wanted to get rid of, but he made all of this for me, because he wanted to make sure I wasn't hungry.
"Of course,"
he responds as if it's obvious.
"But if you want something else, I think I have all the ingredients for enchiladas. Or we can order in. I just thought something homemade would be nice."
"Ryder, I don't even know what to say," I whisper, turning to face him. "It's too much." I'm not sure if I'm referring to the amount of food, which is undoubtedly more than I could eat in a week, or the act of this near stranger going out of his way to provide for me.
"Then I guess you'll have to stay with me until we finish it all,"
he answers smoothly. Ryder's lips pull to one side in the smallest, sexiest grin. God, swoon. How can I say no to that? "Let's get through lunch first," I say, though I return his smile. It's not like I have anywhere else to go. And if Ryder is content to have me here for now, I'll soak up every minute of being under his roof. Ryder hands me a plate and goes through the options again. Each one more.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?